Yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Jeff Bryant, and you're listening to Now We're Talking. Ariel Pocock has received international acclaim as an equally captivating jazz pianist, vocalist, and composer. She is currently on tour in support of her recently released album Living in Twilight, and just this afternoon was a featured performer at the Vancouver International Jazz Festival, and she's here in the studio with me now. Welcome, Ariel.
Thank you, Jeff.
So how was the performance today?
I think it went pretty well. It was a lot of fun. We had a good crowd. It was a beautiful day.
Yeah, good timing. I guess that's why they do it this time of year, because everybody comes out of the woodwork, eh?
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah, nice to perform outdoors.
It was, you know, and it's always a crapshoot with that, because sometimes people just get too hot.
Yeah, it's
but
true.
I think today it was just right.
And this is your first time coming to Vancouver?
It is.
Even though you grew up in Seattle?
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
I know, I never made it up here.
Well, isn't that cool when music, you know, brings you to places that you've always meant to go to or intended to go to?
One of my favorite parts of
it. Yeah, and of course, always a mixed blessing because you've got to get in and out of town so quickly. I think you came in today from Victoria, is that right?
We did. We took the ferry in this morning.
Yeah.
It was great.
It's beautiful, right?
It's gorgeous, yeah.
And how long are you here for?
Until 5:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.
There you go. Perfect example of what I'm saying in terms of getting in and getting out. So where are you off to next?
I'm going to Seattle.
Oh, back to Seattle.
Yeah,
okay.
For a day to do a little show with a friend. It's just, cool. I'm just supporting.
Nice. Yeah. And what's it like to do a show back in Seattle, which is where you grew up?
Well, I'm excited. I'm going to see some like high school friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might drive by my old house and freak myself out a little.
Nice. Yeah. Has it been a while since you visited?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, let's talk about the history of you and music. I'm curious to know what the, I looked at some clips online. I saw that you were a bit of a virtuoso as a teenager. You're playing some high caliber performances as a 14-year-old. I saw a clip of, for example.
It's going to haunt me forever.
When did you start? When did you start playing piano and discovering your love of jazz?
Well, I'm the child of two classical pianists.
Right.
Both of my parents were classical performers, teachers. You know, as we all do as musicians, we wear many hats. You know, we teach, we play,
right.
We run festivals, this and that. So I just kind of grew up around classical music. And at some point, they had a friend who came over and would play like ragtime piano and stride.
Cool.
And I remember being a little kid and just grooving out to it, being like, this is what I want to do.
Connected,
right?
For some reason.
And so one way or another, I ended up with a CD of Mel Torme and George Shearing, which for an 8-year-old to be listening to in hindsight is hilarious.
It's
like these two old white dudes, like,
yeah.
You know.
This feels right to me,
like dinner,
as an 8-year-old girl.
Dinner and jazz, you know, like the live album. But yeah, and so my parents got me a Walkman for Christmas, I remember, and I had this CD, and they were like, oh, you know, she's probably listening to, I don't know, Kids Bop. And they're like, what do you have there? I was like, it's George Shearing and Mel Torme. And they're like, we got to get you in jazz piano lessons.
Nice.
This is very strange.
So they embraced that.
They did, yeah. And since, you know, grew up around music, they knew a teacher who was willing to teach an 8-year-old jazz piano. And it kind of just, I never looked back since then, honestly.
That's amazing. Yeah. And were you always singing as well, or was it mostly piano for a long time?
It was mostly piano for a long time.
That's interesting. Tell me more about that.
Right. Well, singing is, at least in my opinion, it's very intuitive. I think anybody and everybody could sing.
I agree with that.
I don't think it's something you have to develop as much as an instrument, where you do need to, you know, spend countless hours. And that's not to say that singing isn't an art form in itself, because there are singers far better than I that, you know, treat it as the craft that it is. But for myself personally, it feels very natural and more unaffected. So by the time I did start singing, it felt like kind of a natural extension of the piano playing. And it just kind of felt like a more organic expression of sort of all the things I wanted to bring to the table. Whereas with piano, sometimes it would feel like, well, you know, this is fun, but something's still missing here.
Right.
And when I get to sing and play, it just sort of feels like it clicks into place.
And when did that happen? When did the singing commence?
I think I started actually singing out, you know, in public and not just in the shower when I was about 17. So,
okay,
you know, not too long ago.
But a significant period of time where you focused on piano and then introduced
right,
that
as
and you became a young adult.
And then I still have always sort of focused more on piano. I did my degree in jazz piano at university. So, you know, to me, it seems like the piano is a thing that I need to, you know, put in the hours, put in the homework. And the singing, at least for me, again, other people don't treat it like this, but I get to kind of just sit down and do it, and it feels okay. I'm sure I'll run into problems later, but we'll see.
You're sure, you're certain, you're certain of it.
Oh, I don't know, we'll see.
We'll see. I know that this recent release is your second album, Living in Twilight.
Right.
The first album that had vocals as well, did it? Vocals and piano, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And did you record that first album in Montreal? Was that
No, okay. I recorded that one in New York, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, Sear Sound.
What's the Montreal connection? I was seeing some. Did you record the second one in Montreal?
Yeah. So, long story short.
Or long.
You know, it's okay. I already had Touchstone, the first album. I already had it recorded. It was just done.
Okay.
And I didn't have it on a label. So, a couple of years ago, I was invited to play at the Quebec City Jazz Festival. And it was really fun. I'd never been to... Might have been my first time in Canada, even.
Really?
And I had never been to, you know, French-speaking Quebec, so it was really fun to go up and do that. And while I was there, the guy that was booking that festival said, hey, by the way, you know, I have some contacts with this Montreal label just in time. Maybe we show them your CD. Maybe you get in touch with just in time because this could be cool. And so it was sort of just a really nice serendipitous thing where I was able to come up a few more times to play and... make some connections with musicians up there, and then eventually just in time agreed to put out this new record with me, and we've had a great, at least on my end, great relationship ever since.
Yeah, I'm sure that you have. I don't doubt it for a second. Yeah. That's awesome. The Canadian connection. It's interesting.
Yeah, it was just random because the only reason I even got that Quebec City Jazz Festival was because the friend of the booker of that festival really liked the guitarist, Julian Lage on Touchstone, and he was literally just sitting around Googling, and he said, what's this girl, Ariel Pocock? What is she? And then the booker was listening and said, oh, I wonder if I can find her on the internet and send her a Facebook message. You know,
isn't that always the way,
right? You know, like...
It's funny, like, all the efforts that are made when you're trying to pursue a career in the arts to get all your ducks in a row and do the things you're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
And in the final analysis, it can be something as circumstantial as that.
I mean, honestly, it seems like, I mean, maybe I just have pretty good luck, but it feels like a lot of stuff like that does just... You know, like you say, you do all this work and you say, well, I have to have my resume like this and, you know, make these contacts. And then when things do work out, it just kind of feels like, well, shoot. I mean, I just got really lucky with that one. So
I guess it's just putting yourself out there, right? It's like you make sure you have the cards and you go to the festivals and you release the albums.
Right.
But it's just being out in the world.
I think that's true. And a big part of it is also just being willing to kind of say yes to a lot of things that you might not even... necessarily have considered before, because there's so many, you know, as you know, as a creative type, there's no set path. There's not, you know, you do this for 5 years and you do this for 5 years and then you have your tenured job and da 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 da. So we have to just be so willing to just say, you know, if an opportunity comes along, say, great, let's go for it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the perfect fit, but if not, I'm going to learn something from it. I'm going to take something from it. I think a lot of the experiences that I've had up to this point, have been along those lines where something comes up and you just kind of jump and not second guess it too much.
Like a radio show in a basement at UBC that maybe you've never heard of before. Who knows? Never know who might listen to it and what it could result in.
Absolutely.
So what's it like to live that way? What's it like to live that way as you describe that lifestyle, which is not every day
it's
is different.
No,
it's an adventure. But what are the challenges of living that way?
Well, I think I'm lucky because my parents understand it, you know, completely.
Yeah.
And as I know from many of my friends whose parents are, you know, lawyers and doctors, it's very difficult for a lot of us to explain to people that are in more traditional career paths, you know, this is an okay way to do things.
Yeah.
No, I don't know what I'm doing 6 months from now, but I'll be doing something. Yeah. And I'll be working really hard, you know. And I think it's just, I'm sure you can relate to this, you have to be really self-disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so much harder than having a deadline, like a, you know, an imposed deadline or an imposed quota.
You need to impose them on yourself.
You have to, and you have to be your own toughest critic and your own toughest boss.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to do it for you, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to come and shake their finger at you. They're just going to say, oh, forget it then.
And while doing all that, still leaving some space that remains for you to treat yourself with some love too.
And
so you need to be the disciplinarian,
be creative,
but to nurture yourself too, especially creatively.
Yeah, which makes us sound like... really delicate little flowers, but it's true. You know, you just have to sort of know yourself really well, where I feel like when I've done other types of work where, whether it's academic or if I'm doing, you know, writing an essay or, you know, doing a more traditional job where you go in, you punch in, you do the work, and then you finish and you get to go home with this sense of like, well, I did it for
the
day.
That's done.
Now I go home, turn my brain off. Whereas for us, it's like you get home from the gig and you think, well, shoot, now I got to think about this. I want to practice that, you know.
I should respond to that email.
Yes.
I should update my blog,
you know,
whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. So you just really have to be to sum it up, you have to be tough on yourself.
Yeah. And structured with your time.
Absolutely.
And again, like for me, thinking about finding those moments to say, this is going to be my free time.
Yes,
because as you say, it's not a given that it's from 5 p.m. until bedtime on a Tuesday night or whatever.
Totally. And not being guilty when you do say, no, you know, I am going to just do this, read this book for an hour, whatever it may be.
Because of course that feeds the creativity as well.
It really does.
Is to make sure you
step away from it for a second.
So you can justify in that sense too as well if need be, if we need to do that.
Yeah, sure.
So what's it like for you to be on the road? I know that you're going to be doing some touring for the next couple of weeks. You're going back to Montreal. I think you're going to Rochester and some other places as well. Is that exciting for you to hit the road this time of year?
It's really exciting. Yeah. I mean, it's the best, you know, when you have your normal life at home, you know, I teach and I play gigs in the area, and I, you know, live a pretty normal lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then I get to go on the road and kind of be somebody else for a while.
Yeah.
And it's a real treat. And I think in my normal day-to-day life, I'm pretty introverted and pretty shy. And I think when I do things like this, it forces me to just, you know, get out of my comfort zone.
Tap
and
into the
interact
extrovert.
With people, which sounds kind of pathetic when you put it like that.
You know, I can relate to that.
Leave my cave.
I think a lot of performers can relate to that.
No,
actually.
But it is really, really, what's the word that I want right now? It's very energizing to be around that kind of, energy, not to be redundant, but, you know, just meeting all these new people, and especially playing with new musicians is really, really fun.
Yeah.
And I know some people don't like doing that. They only want to tour with their band. But for me, I was talking about this with the guys that I'm playing with on this leg of the tour. It's such a delight to play with musicians because they bring a totally new spirit to your music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that the CD is recorded sounds totally different from the way we just played all that music because they bring their own touch to it.
Yeah.
And it's just great to spend 3 days. You know, when you're on tour with people, it's very intense. You're hanging out all day. And you better hope you get along.
Yeah.
I think they're listening right now.
And hope most of the time you do. But it's kind of like it's like a marriage amongst a number of people,
totally,
isn't it?
Totally, man. Yeah. And, you know, and it's just fun to kind of have this really intense experience with these new people. And then you leave and you go back a year later and it's like you can pick up where you left off, you know?
Yeah.
And you just, everywhere you go, you're just spreading out feelers. And then, you know, when you know, one of your friends say, oh, I need a bass player in this city. And you say, great, cool. Now you guys are connected and the web grows. So that's my favorite part is just meeting new musicians, meeting new people.
It is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's definitely like an outcome of putting in the effort to become a musician, to tap into this world of beautiful people with beautiful intentions.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So you live in Durham, North Carolina?
I do.
I've traveled a fair bit around the States, but I've never been to Durham. What's it like there?
It's lovely.
Is it?
People are so, I don't know if I can curse on this, but
go for it.
So damn friendly. That's a mild curse.
That's a mild curse indeed.
Sorry,
I went on a limb there. I wasn't sure how hardcore it was going to get.
No, it's okay.
But we can handle that for sure.
All right. I do have a church gig, so I'll No, they're not listening right now, unless they are.
You never know.
You never know.
After the fact, it's possible.
So anyways, it's a lovely place, and there's a really deep-seated appreciation for jazz.
Cool.
Which I had no idea. I just moved there for family, and it's been great.
It's a happy accident.
I know, and people really swing, which is great because not everyone's like that.
Yeah.
I get the nicest people at my gigs, and it's a small but very high-level jazz scene there of players. So, you know, it's lovely, and the barbecue is just so good. I'm sorry to all the vegetarians listening, but my Lord, just get the mac and cheese or something.
Nice. I like the sounds of
that. It's a
good
place. You should come visit. People are friendly. You got the meat situation. You got the jazz situation.
Yeah.
You know, what more do you need?
How fortunate that you just moved there circumstantially with your family and it happened to dovetail with your ambitions career-wise. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's worked out. You know, I never would have imagined.
Yeah.
It's not a place I pictured myself living in for any amount of time.
And you moved there from Seattle?
I actually moved there from Miami.
Okay, where you went to school.
Yeah,
exactly. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Cool. And what was it like to be down there for school?
Well, it was a wild ride.
Was it?
Yeah. Sorry. Got something in my throat. It was really fun to be at that school because it's a very, what's the word I want? It's a longstanding institution. You know, it's one of the oldest jazz programs in the world.
Oh, wow.
So it's been around since the 50s, which for a jazz university program is like monolithic, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
early days.
Yeah. So I was around just like just constantly getting my butt kicked by killer jazz pianists, teachers, peers, friends, visiting people. And it's a really nice little school bubble where you're just kind of, you are in a university environment, but the music school is so great.
Kind of self-contained. You just focus on what you're doing there.
We're all just such nerds. Yeah. We just would go to parties and like play transcriptions for each other. It was great. So I really liked Miami, and I went snorkeling and went to the beach and stuff. So it was a great place. And I did get to have a little exposure to like Cuban music too.
Nice.
Not as much as I would have liked in hindsight. I feel like I'm just now scratching the surface.
But it gave you the taste.
Yeah, but it planted the seed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, what's that like for you in terms of creating music, to have access to different styles of music and how it informs what you write?
Yeah, well, I think that for me, it's always important to not try to shoehorn things in. You know, it's like, well, this influence is going to be in this song, and that's
sure.
that. I try to keep true to myself. And for example, like one of the songs on this record is called Gonzalo's Melody, and it's written as a tribute to one of my favorite Cuban jazz pianists, Gonzalo Rubalcaba.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece itself, if you played it for somebody who has an extensive knowledge of Cuban music, they would say, oh, well, you know, this is not like authentic. This is not legit danzón or tumbao or whatever. But, you know, it's my take on it and it's what I hear. And I think it's okay for us as jazz musicians to pick and choose, because we're all just
totally.
Magpies, you know.
Magpies, I mean, isn't that what magpies? Art is? I'm not sure. I've never pluralized that
I've
word
never
before.
Said it out loud. Just read it, but you know what I mean. We're all stealing little things. So
yeah, that's what art is, isn't
yeah.
it? It's like we're all everybody, right. no matter who it is grabbing from disparate things and reimagining into something new.
So so that's a good question though, because for my own music, I do try to. You know, like I'll go through phases, as we all do, of listening to different things, and it comes out. But I try to not force it in.
Yeah.
If I hear it, I hear it. If I don't, I'm not going to beat myself up over it.
Yeah. And sometimes it can just happen unconsciously.
Exactly.
Too.
When you're playing it, too.
Yeah. I always find that interesting with music, is maybe lyrically, for example, to look back at a song and say, oh, that's what this was about.
Totally.
You don't
yeah.
necessarily know, or
yeah.
you think you do, but of course, we change and we evolve.
That's the great thing about art, is that it reveals all these parts of yourself that you didn't even know about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You say, oh, wow.
It's pretty exhilarating when you notice
time.
That.
Yeah.
It can be really helpful in terms of self-reflection, actually.
Absolutely,
music
yeah.
It can
be a little terrifying sometimes,
yeah.
too. You say, oh,
yeah,
dear.
Absolutely.
Gotta shake those cobwebs out.
Yeah, let's play one of your songs. You talked about that one you just mentioned there. We've talked about some other options before we started the show, but what are you feeling? What mood are you in in terms of the tracks on your album? Anything's possible here. I have all of them here. They're all in front of me.
Let's see. I like Living in Twilight. You can play the title track.
Yeah, title track.
It's the Weepies cover.
That'll plant it in people's minds. So that's the name of the album. Here it is, Ariel Pocock, Living in Twilight.
You look darkly on the day with memories to light your way. Little sad, but it's all right. We are always living in twilight. No one knocks upon your door until you don't care anymore. A little alone, but it's all right. We are always living. Dream, walking in between sunrise and sunset, living in a dream, walking in between sunset and sunrise. You get tied up in your day, so I let go and walk away. Walking in between sunset and sunrise. Step out in the twilight. So I stumble home at night, like I've stumbled through my life, with ghosts and visions in my sight. We are always living in twilight.
There it is, Living in Twilight from Ariel Pocock's album, Living in Twilight. You know, we were just having a very good conversation off the air, and I'm thinking, God damn it.
Yeah, it's okay. We can rehash
it. Just rehash it as if it never happened so spontaneously
so,
and
what
naturally.
Do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's okay.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about was the producer for your album, same producer for both?
Yes.
So what's that like to work with the same producer twice? I guess nice because you've gotten to know what the deal is.
Absolutely.
The first time around.
Exactly. Well, Matt Pearson, the producer, is somebody that I met when I was quite young. I was only 18.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm, in hindsight, really happy that I entrusted my, you know, my tender young, you know,
early
brain.
Years of your career, yeah.
Yeah, but to somebody who was so thoughtful about developing me kind of in a way that would leave many doors open.
Yeah.
Because when I was starting to make this first album, I think I was pressured by several different people that I considered working with to kind of go really hard one way or another, you know, like, only piano or only voice or only really, really straight ahead jazz or only this, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And Matt was very, very sensitive to keep a great balance of, you know, I have the singing, I have the playing, I have things that are more straight ahead, I have things that are more folky or poppy or avant-garde or what have you. So he really left the door open for me to have that control over the next album. So mm-hmm. like, I think for this Living in Twilight album, at least to me, hopefully listeners might agree that it continues kind of on what Touchstone built, where I do have pretty diverse flavors on it, where I do have the things that feel more singer-songwriter-y.
Yeah.
I do have things that are a little more ECM, a little more avant-garde type feeling. I have things that are quite straight ahead, you know. So I'm really happy that Matt was there. You know, for the first album, he did offer quite a lot of guidance. And then for the second one, it's great because he let me kind of take more control over things, which I wasn't, you know, I didn't know because, you know, 4 years passed in between actually making them. You know, it's a lot of from 20 to 24, you grew up quite a bit.
Big time.
You come into yourself. So it was really great to work with somebody. Sorry, I'm watching this guy eat pizza out the window.
That's what you get here at CITR.
Yeah, it's okay.
Was he winking?
Yeah.
Pizza and winking. Nice combo.
Yeah, lucky me. So anyways, it was great to work with somebody who was just so perceptive to the needs of a young jazz musician because I'm very delicate and special. But, you know, it's so easy to just be pushed in one direction and then you really close a lot of doors for yourself because people will just see you as a singer or they'll just see you as a pianist, they'll just box you into this. So to answer your question, great, you know.
Yeah, so important
couldn't have
to have
asked for a
better that
experience.
Relationship.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It says speaks volumes that you would choose to work together again, as you say, get the chance to have the music grow,
absolutely.
Your involvement in it grow as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's just been released this month. right?
Yes,
what does it feel like to work on it for presumably some amount of time, months or years maybe, and now it's available? Does it feel like a relief?
Yeah, I feel like I let a wild animal back into the wild that I like raised from an infant.
Right.
I'm like, go, be free,
be
run
free.
Into the forest.
Yeah.
I'm not your mom anymore.
Prosper. Go into the forest and prosper.
Yeah. No, it's my little song babies running free. And it's very nerve-wracking because, you know, we all have egos. And it's difficult sometimes to just say to yourself, you know, it's out of my hands now.
Mm-hmm.
I did my job. And it's not up to me whether people love it or they hate it or they give it bad reviews or good reviews. You know, I offered what I have to offer.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah.
It's difficult to let go of.
Right. Yeah, the experience
so
of release.
It's frightening, but it's also nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good release.
Because it would be crazy making to spend your whole life living inside a project. I think sometimes for artists,
we spoke
about deadlines before, it's like without having that, it could always be better.
Well, exactly.
In your
and
mind,
that's another, going back to the producer thing, is another thing that's great is because, you know, if I had my own way for this last one, I mean, there's a couple tracks that I really drove my trio nuts because I said, no, one more take. And finally Matt would say, nope, we got it. And I'd be like, no, but I feel like I have one more. And
I'm
he's
so
like,
close.
But we have it. And that's how you're playing today.
Yeah.
So that's how it's going to be. You know, and it's good because a record is just a snapshot of who you are in a moment. It's not your entire being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just where you are at that point in time. And I think that's a great thing with jazz is that it's not produced to the nth degree and it's not super always incredibly finessed.
No auto-tune.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but, you know, and that's not to say there's not jazz records that are not meticulously crafted in that way. But I think for my own projects, at least, I do want to keep that element of spontaneity. And if that includes, like, maybe that one solo is not my favorite solo ever. But that's how I was playing in December 2016 when I was 24. You know, like, that's beautiful. That's okay.
It's captured, yeah.
Yeah, like, I'll listen back to it and I'll either love it or I'll be like, wow, I've gotten a lot better. And both of those are great feelings to have. You know, it's okay. Like,
yeah, and your perception of it can shift as well.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting. It's like a living, breathing thing.
Like, the worst thing that could happen is I listen back to it and I'm like, I've gotten better.
Yeah,
which
is a good problem to have.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
better than getting, for some reason, your skills just degrade.
Right.
And you're
that
like,
would
God,
be...
I was so good December 2016 when I was 24
I
years
know.
Old. What
and
happened to me?
Fortunately, that hasn't happened to me yet.
Yeah, I
haven't looked back and been like, oh, man, took a nosedive. Like...
Let me know if it does. I'll be there to comfort you. Okay. I don't think it will, though. It seems very
Hopefully.
Unlikely. It seems
I don't
absurd.
Know, unless I like, you know, take a huge detour and...
Knock on wood. We're just knocking on all sorts of wood here today on the show. By the way, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. Ariel Pocock is in the booth. She rushed over here after doing performance this afternoon, which I appreciate because I know you're getting up at 5:30 in the morning to go off to the next thing.
No. It's okay when I'm on tour. I just don't go to sleep at
Just
all.
Don't go to sleep.
No,
How much sleep do you get? That can't be true. So how much sleep do you actually get when you're on tour?
I mean, like, if you add it up since I got to Canada, it's like barely in the double digits. It's been fun.
Because you're meeting people, you're doing things, you're taking it all in?
Yeah, we're going to jam sessions and we're waking up early to go on ferries and we're hanging. We got the getting the trio vibe down.
Yeah.
And that includes sitting around and drinking coffee and chatting. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is nice. It is a nice experience. You're making me pine for the experience of touring.
Yeah. No, it's really fun. I'm lucky to do it.
Yeah, for sure. So Rochester's coming up. Montreal's coming up. What else is on the tour?
I'm going to Quebec City to play at Le Petit Champlain, a beautiful old theater there that I have not played at before.
Nice. Really beautiful city, eh?
Oh, it's
very European by the standards of North America.
And then I'm also playing at a festival called Festivoix, like Festival of Voice in Trois-Rivières.
Okay.
Which is gorgeous. I think it's like one of the oldest settlements in North America.
Hmm.
And it's on the river and it's very pretty. And then after that, I go home for a minute, and then I play at the Greencastle Summer Music Festival, I believe. It's in Indiana.
Oh, cool.
And then, I don't know if I'm allowed to announce the next ones yet, so I'll stop.
Stop there. Leave some intrigue. Leave some intrigue.
Yeah.
Always leave them wanting just a little bit more.
No, yeah. So that's Rochester is the next one, though. Well,
nice.
Seattle, but I'm just kind of
You said you're supporting another act.
Yes.
Oh, sidewomaning, right.
That's right.
What's that act? What's that about?
Well, it's actually my old piano teacher.
Oh, cool.
His name is Michael Stegner. He's a very, very talented guy. He's a fantastic jazz pianist and singer. And I owe him so much. Like, Michael, if you're listening, you're great. See you tomorrow. Really early. And he has this kind of side project where it's him doing more kind of fusion-y, making beats and doing vocoder and singing. And then I'm playing like Rhodes and synthesizer and singing a little bit. So it's really fun. It's
yeah.
It's a little, it's not really straight ahead jazz. Don't tell anyone. So, but it's going to be nice to do that in the midst of like doing all my own music. I'll just go do this for
take
a day.
Take a departure and, for a day.
Yeah. So it's going to be
support
fun.
Him. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a full circle experience.
Yeah,
he was your teacher.
Exactly. So yeah. It's going to be fun.
So what about songwriting for you? Are you always writing songs, or are you usually writing when you're thinking about the next album?
Oh, geez. Well, songwriting does not come, like lyric writing, if that's what we're talking about.
Sure.
Or are we talking about
either,
or
we could talk about composition,
general?
But we could talk about a fully realized song that includes lyrics
well,
as well.
Well, yeah, and I was just speaking to some other musicians about this last night. For me, it does not come naturally. It's not something that just, I know some musicians that just crank out a song a day, like I have to tie myself
I wrote
to the
it
piano.
In 15 minutes on a napkin.
And, you know, I've had that happen like once or twice, and it is an amazing, it's an incredible feeling when it just pours out of you, but it's not like that for me, and I think it's not like that for a lot of people, because it's a craft. It's not just a magical thing that you pull out of
You just conjure.
Your pocket.
Yeah.
For
very, very polite. Very polite. Out of your front jean
out
pocket.
Out of your denim pockets in your yes. No, but for me it's not natural, and I have to go through like so much neurosis to get it on paper. Like I have to, you know, I sit in the shower and I'm like having this idea, but I can't get it out, and then I have to
Know it's in there, locked
in there.
You have faith
it's,
that it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's,
but you need
it's
to grab
like,
it.
Kind of like something else that we won't mention, but eventually, I just have to...
You make me feel like we need to do like an after-hours version of this show where it can just all come out.
It's okay, as it were. But anyways, I have to record myself, and I have to write it down in pen, and then I have to type it, and then I have to write it in pencil, and I have to rip it into shreds and throw it into the bonfire. You know, it's a long process. It's not easy for me. And it, the only thing that I've found recently that's kind of been getting me through some serious... is just writing like little short stories, actually.
That's cool.
Where I'm like, here's the vibe I want, here's the picture. It's too much pressure to be like, well, here's my perfect verse that's already rhyming, it's already fitting perfectly.
Right.
And instead I'm like, well, all the songs that I love, it's painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love it because it rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't love it because the syllables match.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, it's storytelling.
That's the craftsmanship that happens when you're sculpting.
And I would say to an extent that's true for any composition, not even like songs with lyrics, you know, any instrumental compositions, it's telling a story, and whether that has to be super literal or not is up to you.
Right.
So I've been trying to just write these little vignettes. This is making me sound really pretentious.
Or maybe you're onto something. I find it interesting because I feel like anything that helps you get through that block.
Yeah, and it's really fun because it's fun to do something where I'm like, nobody else is going to see this except me. I don't have to go into this with the idea of like, what are people going to think of the words and the music?
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm just going to do this little snapshot
for
my
me.
Own enjoyment.
This is an exercise for me.
Yeah, and for me, that really took a lot of the pressure off of constantly going into it like, this has to be as good as all the other songs that I play by other people.
Yeah.
Because that's a bad way to go through anything. And
it just strangles creativity, isn't it?
And we all, as artists, we really have to just like get over ourselves all the time. Like, you're not going to immediately like... you know, come out and write Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. You're not going to immediately come out and write Catch 22. Like, you have to get some crap out first and, like, just let it go and then see what comes out.
I feel like that's the irony of having an ambition to create extraordinary work because you've been influenced by extraordinary work.
Totally,
is that you want to get in there and justify
immediately
that there's proof of concept for me wanting to do this thing, and anything short of that will reveal that I'm a fraud and I'll jump off a cliff or something.
Absolutely.
But the pressure is so immense that's the one thing that we do to ourselves that makes it difficult to get there.
Right, and it's so largely self-imposed, too. We're, like I mentioned this already, we're all our own toughest critics, especially as... you know, creative types, we have to set our own deadlines. But it's like, it's just impossible sometimes when the first thing you do when you create something is just judge it like an outsider. Like, you just have to let go of that.
Yeah.
Just think, I'm going to create something.
Yeah.
And you know in your heart whether it's good or not. You know, like, you aren't going to put something out there that you're unhappy with. But at the same time, for a certain point, if you're just obsessed with perfection all the time, you're never going to move forward
because
you're
so
not going to just be perfect.
Yeah, I'm so aware of that process when it comes to lyric writing in particular, where for me it's just like, this is just going to block out this spot I see that it's horribly cliché-ic. I see why I hate it, but it's a placeholder.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I'll change it later. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes that thing that I was so insistent out of the gates was unacceptable.
Later,
I'm like, I like that, actually.
I like it. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Because I gave it a chance. Uh-huh. You know, I gave it a shot.
Right. You gave yourself a fighting chance to just kind of not be so tough on yourself all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to do that with, like, everything. And just, you know, like, it's more important to just write a new song than it is to have it be, like, your masterpiece hit song. Like, just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about, we talked about lyricizing there. What about composing the music? Is it similar
or exactly the same?
It is.
Exactly the same. Everything applies. Same process that I
even
have
in
to
the
do.
Shower, I'm thinking. That's
right,
interesting.
Yeah.
Like a
Casio situation
or something?
No, usually I just, you know, humming. Like to go on walks and just kind of, like, I'm the crazy person. Like,
really? Just pulling melodies out of the air like
no,
a crazy
just,
woman?
Like, people avoid me. Like, they cross the street because I'm like bopping out to my own head. So,
I wish we could see that. You need to create a video of that, of you doing that.
Sure, it's out there already.
Yeah, probably. Somebody like, there she is.
Security cameras.
Oh my God, it's Ariel.
She's at the coffee shop again.
She's coming.
She's coming up
with a melody. This is dangerous. Somebody help her across the street, please.
Yeah. No, I guess to just sum it all up, just like, just have your mental picture and then just run with it.
Yeah.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Because nobody else is going to be that hard on you.
Yeah, it's funny.
And if they are,
they're not
okay.
A very good friend.
No,
if they are.
They're mean.
Yeah,
because
we're so mean
to
ourselves as artists.
Are,
we totally are.
No, it's like, would you ever talk to somebody else the way you talk to yourself, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for some critics, the answer is yes. they get paid to do that, though. But that's okay.
So hopefully
that's,
not take
you know,
it too personally.
If you're a good critic, you're a good critic. That's okay. Like,
yeah.
I'm okay with that.
And so this is always evolving for you. It feels like you're always gaining more knowledge about this. What do you think, as you project into the future, because you're 24 now, is that right?
Last time I checked,
24, last time you checked. Yeah, I did see you check your ID before you came in. I was wondering why you were doing that.
Yeah.
You just wanted to know that, just in case I asked.
Who am I?
Smart. So when you think about the future of your career, which, as we say, you're just getting warmed up here, what do you think is going to happen? What do you want to have happen? Do you give it much thought? I mean, obviously, it's a large thing.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I kind of have broad brushstroke things that I would love to do. I love recording.
Yeah.
And I would love to try all sorts of different things. One dream of mine is like to do a live record, I think would be really cool. Because now that I've done the two studio records, which is a very intense process, and it's very different from just performing. I would love to capture like the energy, warts and all, of a live performance.
Yeah.
Whether or not other people would agree with that, I don't know.
There's only one way to find out.
And I'm sorry, I had a lot of spaghetti before this. It's okay. I really, really love playing in other people's projects. That's something that I actually haven't done as much of as heading my own shows. You know, with my own music. And I would love to, you know, do more touring, do more playing just in other people's projects. So if anyone's out there and they, you know, want a pianist.
You're available.
Hit me up, yeah.
She's ready.
No, but seriously, it's a really important part of the jazz tradition. You know, we're all collaborative artists. And otherwise, what's the point? Just sit at home, do it yourself.
Yeah.
So
and I imagine that experience, of course, could inform your own work.
And just as of pretty recently, I've been teaching more. So working with kids and some jazz, some just kind of everything.
Yeah.
And I would love to maybe teach at a university at some point. I would have to go to school more for that. But not something that I originally saw myself as an educator type. But the more I do it, the more I realize that at the risk of tooting my own horn, I would have liked to have had somebody like my age or kind of in my position working with me.
Right.
Because I'm sure this is not a surprise to anyone listening, but the world of jazz is heavily, heavily, heavily dominated by older dudes.
Right.
Especially,
that will die at some point, by the way.
Especially the instrumental side of things, you know?
Right.
And I wish I had had more, like, younger women that I could see doing what I'm doing, because it wouldn't have made me feel like it was so weird or like a novelty, like, oh, girl's playing jazz piano, like, she's just in the band because she's a girl. Like, you know, because that's stupid.
Yeah, because it's atypical. You feel like you need to prove, okay, actually, I'm a legitimate
musician. So,
you know,
I try to, you know, I love teaching. I love teaching all kind of kids. But, like, if some girl jazz pianists come along, I'm like, hell yeah, you know, it's very exciting.
Do you see more of that happening, do you think?
Yes, absolutely, which is great.
That must be.
Even since, like, 10 years ago when I was, like, in kid jazz camps and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
And what do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I think it's probably because of people like, for example, like Esperanza Spalding is one that I think a lot of people look up to.
It really takes that role modeling, doesn't it? That's
right.
That's how the process plays out.
I'm trying to pull some other names. Let's see. Well, I mean, there's people that are super established, like Ingrid and Christine Jensen. They were just here, or maybe they're just in Victoria. Either way, and like drummer Terry Lynn Carrington, these Rini Rosnes pianist. They're a little bit older than maybe Esperanza, but just kick ass. You know, female jazz musicians that take no shit from anyone.
Yeah.
So for me, that was like, when I first learned about them, I was like, oh my goodness, like, at last I can see people doing this that aren't guys and that aren't cranky old dudes.
cranky
not that they all are, but some of them
dudes.
Are, you know. So I think just honestly, like, the more the merrier. And hopefully by the time, like, either, you know, when I'm older or if I have kids of my own, like, hopefully it just, like, won't even be weird to see. Because even when you see a band now and there's, like, three girls in it, it's like, whoa, so many girls, three girls and 17 guys, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that...
It's still a work in progress.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's like the
it's progressing.
One of these very last bastions where it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
So hopefully...
I feel like so much is subject to change in the era of the internet. You know, the internet's quite new.
Yeah, it is.
And I feel like that's the ultimate way for people to gain access to ideas that they otherwise don't have in their immediate environment.
So I guess to sum it up, I just, you know, I like teaching. I like working with kids. I like working with female musicians that are badasses. And
she likes the badasses.
I have a soft spot. Yeah.
A soft spot for badasses.
Right. Yeah.
Can't really beat that. Folks, you've been listening to Now We're Talking. Believe it or not, Ariel, we're out of time. But thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much
and,
for having
me. Living in Twilight is the album that was just released, and that's available on the internet, I'm sure. How could it not be?
It
must be.
Is.
iTunes.
Yeah.
How do people consume music these days? Do they go to your website and purchase the physical disc these days?
You can go to the Just in Time website.
Okay.
It's the label it's on. You can go to Amazon. It's on iTunes. It's on Spotify if that's your jam. It's on Apple Music.
If you've got jams, it's available.
And
it
you can
found.
Just, if you just go to my Facebook page or my Instagram, which are just my names, you can find it for streaming and you can look at pictures of my cats.
Whatever you want. How many cats do you have?
Two.
Two cats. Yeah, it's good to have two. Did you get them at the same time?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a
you had to add one to the mix.
Period.
Yeah, there's a transition.
It was like
right
when I was getting ready for the new record, so it was like,
oh yeah,
gotta like write these charts, gotta like have mediation with my cats, like busy.
Yeah, you gotta schedule that into the day. Mediate dispute between cats.
Yeah, so, nice. I mean, it's not easy.
Well, thanks for coming in, Ariel.
Thanks so much for
Cheers.
Having me.
Okay, see ya.